We're on Daf Kuf Nun Amid Beis. Today's Daf is Kuf Nun Aleph. And we're studying now a statement of Abba Shaul, quoted here two lines before the end of Kuf Nun Amid Beis. Klal Omar Abba Shaul, Kol Shani Zakoi Bamiroso, Rashoyani Lahachshich Olav. And Abba Shaul, in this formulation, in this principle, creates an interdependence between Lahachshich Al HaTchum and Amira. And if you're looking for a barometer, when are you allowed to be Machshich Al HaTchum and go out on Shabbos to the end of the boundary of the Tchum, 2,000 Amma after, outside the city limits? You're allowed to do that if you could tell someone that what you're interested in doing, and you're allowed to tell them that that's what you're allowed to do, because there's no malacha. It doesn't entail a malacha. So the Gemara now tries to clarify Abba Shaul and his statement in two stages. Stage number one, the very formulation of his principle, and stage number two, why he calls it a klal. What does he mean by a klal? But first we'll go through stage number one. The Gemara says the following. Abba Shaul Ahe, which section of the Mishnah is he commenting on? There's going to be a Reisha and a Sefer. The Reisha is Isur, and the Reisha tells you when you're not allowed to go out there to the Tchum in order to be there located for what you want to do after Shabbos. And the Sefer is going to give us a case of a Heter when you're allowed to do this. Ilema Reisha Koi, if we assume that Abba Shaul is talking about the Reisha, and the Reisha says that you're not allowed to Ein Machshich Al HaTchum Liskar Polim Lavi Peres. If your purpose is that right after Shabbos you want to hire workers or you want to bring in Peros, we said yesterday that those Peros are still growing, so that would entail a Malacha, then you're not allowed to go out to the Tchum. And now we're going to turn to Daf Kuf Nun Aleph Amud Aleph. So the Gemara says, "Hi, the language quote, Kol Shani Zakai Bamiroso Rashoy Ani B'Chashei Choso," meaning that if I'm allowed to speak about it, then I'm allowed to go out to the Tchum, which means that Abba Shaul is coming to give you a Heter. That doesn't make sense, because if he's commenting on the Reisha, he should be formulating a principle that's relevant to Isur, not to Heter, and therefore he should have said, quote, Kol She'eni Zakoi Bamiroso, if he wants to set up this interdependence between Chashicha and Amira, he should have said that if I'm not allowed to speak about it, for example, I can't hire Paulim on Shabbos, then I'm not allowed to go out to the Chashicha and be there with nightfall at the end of the Tchum in order to find my Paulim, mi boile. That's the language that he should have used. In other words, the language of Abba Shaul should parallel the case in the Mishnah that he's dealing with. El ha-sefer koi. But rather, it seems that Abba Shaul is commenting on the Sefer, and in the Sefer, the Mishnah allows you, machshichu lishmar, umevi peros biyodam. He's allowed to go out to the Tchum to supervise his peros. He's not interested in plucking them, and that he's allowed to do. So then, the Mishnah is talking in the Sefer about a Heter. Under what circumstances do we permit you to be Machshich? And if Abba Shaul is commenting on the Sefer, then once again, hi, the language that he should have used would have been, it should have, the appropriate language should have been, quote, Kol Sha'ani Zakoi B'Chashichoso Rashoi Ani B'Amiroso. He should have expanded the Heter of Chashecha and said, well, if you're allowed to go out to the Tchum Shabbos on Shabbos itself in order to supervise your payrolls, then you're allowed to speak and tell someone to supervise your payrolls. He should have taken the Heter of Chashecha and expanded it to Amira, and instead he does it the other way around. He takes the Heter of Amira and applies it to Chashecha. The Gemara answers, Liolam HaSefer Koi, V'Abashol HaHokoi. The Gemara that we're about to learn is a little bit strange in its methodological structure, because what the Gemara is saying is that Avishol is sort of building himself on a statement of Amoraim. Now keep in mind, Avishol is a Tana in the Mishnah. But what the Gemara really means to say is that the following statement of the Amoraim was so pashut, it was so simple in the mind of Avishol, that it was assumed to be so. So in what context did Avishol make his comment and organize his klal? The Amar of Yehuda Amar Shmuel Mutal Yodam Lo Melech Avero Shmar Li Peiro Shebet Chumcha Vani Ashmar Lecha Peiro Shebet Chumi. Let's say Reuven has a certain tchum in which he's allowed to walk within that those bounds on Shabbos, and Shimon has his tchum, and there are peiros that belong to Reuven that happen to fall in Shimon's tchum. So Reuven has no access to these peiros because they're outside of his tchum. And Rabbi Yehuda says in the name of Shmuel that Reuven's allowed to talk to Shimon and say to Shmuel, to Shimon on Shabbos, please, you guard the peiros that are within your bounds on my behalf, these are my peiros, and quid per quo, I will guard the peiros that you own, that are in my tchum, that are outside of your tchum. And again, since the statement of Shmuel about allowing Amira for Shmiras Peros means watching the Peros, it doesn't involve any sort of violation of Melecha Shabbos. So Avishol came along and he said, Kol Shani Zakai Bamiroso, if I'm allowed to speak about it, like this case of Shmiras HaPeros, then I'm allowed to go out to the Tchum of Shabbos to be there on the border, so that after Shabbos, immediately when it gets dark, I will watch my Peros. And when Avishol formulates his principle, he turns to the Tanakama and he says, Min lo modisli, or wouldn't you admit to me that this statement of Rabbi Yudom Shmuel, this principle embodied in the words of Shmuel, is absolutely correct? And muto loma li chaver onam li chavero shmar li peros shebetchumcha vani shmar li chal peros shebetchumcha, that you're allowed to speak about shmiras haperos and that's permissible on Shabbos, is ema. Therefore, Avishol turns to the Tanakhama and he says, you should have formulated the following principle: kol shani zakai b'amiroso rashay ani lahachshich. And you should have now told me that anything that I'm allowed to speak about, for example, shmiras peros, I'm allowed to be machshich al atchum. And that would have given me a broader statement. This is the argument of Avishol against the Tanakhama. A broader statement would have told me that, for example, if I want to tell someone to prepare for a kala, for a bride, or I want to tell someone to prepare for the burial of a dead, I'm allowed to speak about that on Shabbos, and therefore I'm allowed to go to the tchum of Shabbos in order so that with nightfall I'll immediately gather together whatever I need, the hadassim that they used to use for the chuppah, the kala, or the aron and tachrichim that they needed for the mess. So that finishes now round number one, and we understand Avishol's formulation. But what we don't understand, and this is round number two, is why does Avishol speak about a klal? Klal asuye mai. We have a rule that whenever we see the word klal, a general principle, whether it's in a Mishnah or a Braisa, so we always think that the klal is coming to include something. What's it coming to include? And the answer is, lasuye hadetan rabbanim, to include that which is codified in a Braisa. An animal on Shabbos is mukta. And if I want to station myself at the end of the tchum on Shabbos so that after Shabbos I can take my animal back, I'm not allowed to do that. Why? Because then I'm going out to the tchum for something that's prohibited to do on Shabbos, namely for the sake of bringing in an animal which is mukta. But let's say I don't have any contact with the animal. For example, Haisa Omedes Chutz L'Tchum. The animal is situated outside the Tchum. But if I want to bring the animal in, I'm not allowed to walk outside the Tchum to get the animal in. But Korei La, I can yell out to the animal. Let's use the word whistle, you know, figuratively. I can whistle to the animal. V'hi ba, and she'll come into the Tchum. And we're not afraid that if we allow him to call the animal to come into the tchum, maybe he'll be tempted to walk outside the tchum. Klal Omar Avishol Kol Sheni Zakai Bamiroso Rashoy Ani Lahachshich Olav. So now we have the klal of Abba Shol, and he's telling me that if there's a heter amira, then ipso facto there's a heter chashecha, and therefore machshicha lufakeach al iske kalav al iske meis lahavilo aron v'tachrichim. I'm allowed to go out to the boundary, the outer boundary on Shabbos, so that with nightfall I'll be able to cut the hadasim for the sake of the kala. I'll be able to bring in an aron and tachrichim for the sake of the mess. The omrim lo. And I could already speak to my shliach, my agent, and already tell him, lech l'makom ploni. I'm already allowed to speak on Shabbos about preparing for the kala, even if I have to tell him, go to some place and purchase hadasim or a chuppah for the kala, go to such a place where they have a burial society and make sure that you take care of all that we need for the burial. And v'imlo matzasa makom ploni, if you don't find in that place, then havevi makom ploni, go to another place. I'm already instructing him how he is going to do that which is prohibited on Shabbos, after Shabbos, and I'm allowed to tell him on Shabbos what he has to do. And lo matzasa b'mona, I can even say to him, according to the Tanakhama, we'll see that Rabbi Yossi disagrees, that if you don't find it at this price, which is a mona, havevi b'masayim. You know what? Use my credit card and charge me double, if need be. And that you're allowed to say on Shabbos according to Tanakam, Rav Yossi, Rav Yehuda, Omer, Ubilash lo yaskir lo schum mekach. No, that far we're not going to allow you to do. There's no need to get into the muddy aspects here. And now we're up to the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, Machshich in alat chum, lefakech al iske kala, vial iske ames lehovilo aron v'tachrichim. So we're allowed to go out to the outer boundary on Shabbos so that with nightfall on Motzi Shabbos we can take care of whatever we need on behalf of the Kala, on behalf of the mess that has to be buried. Number two, says the Mishnah, Nochri Shehevi Chalilim. They used to have certain types of flutes that they used to blow on. And that was part of the experience of burying the dead. Again, these Chalilim had a certain kind of sound that would invoke a sadness and a sense of grief. And now, the guy brings these chalilim on Shabbos. Now, we know that you're not allowed to benefit from a malacha that was done by a guy on behalf of a Jew. So the Mishnah therefore says, Lo yispod b'em Yisrael. We're not allowed to use these chalilim for purposes of enhancing a hesped, a eulogy, because then we would be benefiting from a malacha that was done by a guy on behalf of a Jew on Shabbos. Elim came, the exception is, bo mimakom karov. If the chalilim came from a close area, which means within the tchum Shabbos, then basically the nachri, the guy in this case, has not done something which I myself couldn't have done. Again, maybe I'd have certain issues, but certainly for the sake of Kavod HaMes, we would allow this. But, says the Mishnah, with the following stipulation, we have to know for sure that the guy brought it from within the Tchum of Shabbos. And this is going to engender a machlokas between Rav and Rabbi Yochan, exactly how to interpret, between Rav and Shmuel, how to interpret this case of Imbo Mimakom Karo. We'll see that in just a minute. But first, let's get to the third case in the Mishnah. Asu lo aron. The Nachrim created some sort of a coffin, or alternatively, chafru lo kever. They buried, they created a, the grave diggers dug a grave. If they did it on behalf of a non-Jew, and for whatever reason, they had an extra grave site, is he covered by Yisrael? Then, since it wasn't done on behalf of a Jew, we can benefit from this malach that was done on Shabbos, but in Bishvil Yisrael, if on the other hand, the guy actually, dug that grave for the purpose of burying a Jew on Shabbos, is then lo yikover bo lumps. We never want to benefit from a malach that was done by a guy on behalf of a Jew, like digging a kever on Shabbos. And the Ran wants to know, why is it a lummis? Why is it never and ever can we ever use this kever that was dug by a guy? In any event, ma'imi makom karov. What does it mean when the Mishnah says that if the Nachri brought these chalilim, these instruments from a makom karo, how do you know ma'imi makom karo? Rava ma'imi makom karo of mamish. We know exactly where he brought, from whence he brought the chalilim, and we know it's around the corner. It's right here in town. It's not from outside the city where maybe it was beyond the tchum. So that Rav assumes that we have to have certainty. We have to know, without a shadow of a doubt, that the chalilim were not brought from chutz l'tchum on behalf of the Jew. Shmuel Amar, chayshinon shema chutz l'chom alonu. The word chayshinon is a little bit problematic here, but it means that tolim means we can assume, we don't know, but we can assume that perhaps, even though the chalilim were brought from another city, but maybe they were immediately beyond the choma. In other words, it wasn't that they went to far out place, which was chutz l'tchum. It was on the other side of the wall that surrounds our city, which is still within 2,000 am of the city limits, and therefore it's still within the tchum. So the Shmuel argues with Rav, and he says, we don't need certainty. As long as we can imagine a possibility that maybe these chalilim were within the tchum of Shabbos, that's sufficient. I got news for you, says the Gemara. If you read the Mishnah carefully, you will see that it reflects the sheet of Shmuel. The Ketani, it says in the Mishnah, if the guy dug a grave on behalf of a non-Jew that he wants to bury, though he brought a coffin, is then Yikover Bo Yisrael. Now, wait a second. Alam Yisveik Asharit. How do you know for sure that the Aron that was brought by this guy wasn't brought on behalf of a Jew? Maybe it was brought on behalf of a Jew, and therefore you're in a suffix situation. The answer is Shari. We're going to allow enjoying the benefit of what the guy did, possibly for another Jew, that possibility. But since there's a possibility that he may have had in mind that he did it for a guy, is therefore Hachanami Misfek Ashari here too. In the case of the Chalilim that were brought, we're also going to say it's a Suffolk. Were the Chalilim entering into Shabbos B'toch HaTchum, were they outside of the Tchum? We don't know. And Shmuel says that's enough to allow us to benefit from these Chalilim, and we're going to apply the principle of Suffolk Shari, Suffolk Mut. Tanya Chavosei de Rav. However, we have a Braisa in Masechta Machshirin that seems to support Rav, and that in a suffix situation we go lechumra. How do we know this? Irshi Yisrael v'nachrim darim ba. Now here's the background to this braisa. Every line in this Gemara needs background. There's a beis hamerchatz, and the goyim are heating up the water in the local bathhouse on Shabbos. And the question is, are they operating these goyim when they turn on the fires on Shabbos on behalf of the Jews who live in that city, or on behalf of the goyim? So actually it's a Mishnah. It says Visanya, it should say Visnan. The Mishnah says in Machshirin that if you have a population in that particular city where the bathhouse is located that's made up of both Jews and non-Jews, Haisa bo merchatz hamarchetzes b'Shabbos, and people are bathing there on Shabbos, and the goyim are heating up the water in this bathhouse. Im rov nachrim, if most of the population, local population made up of non-Jews, is la erev rochitz ba miyad, the Jew is allowed to go into the bathhouse, and immediately after Shabbos, right after Avdolah, he doesn't have to assume that the goyim heated up the water on his behalf. But im rov Yisrael, if on the other hand the city is made up of 51% Jews, then we assume that the guy had in mind the Jews, and when he heated up the water, he was doing that heating on Shabbos on behalf of the Jews, and therefore, yamtin al kadesh yichamu chamin, that after Shabbos, a Jew is not allowed to go into this bathhouse because it was heated up on behalf of the Jewish people, who made up most of the population of the city, and you have to wait, which is called b'chdei sheyasa. B'chdei sheyasa means you have to give a little bit of time, let's say it would take an hour, if the water was cold, to heat up the water, you have to wait that hour, so you're not benefiting from the act of heating up the water on Shabbos. What about Mechtzah al Mechtzah? We have 50-50 Jewish and non-Jewish population. Is the Brisa, the Mishnah says, then Osir, Ad Kidei She'achumu Chama, you again have to wait after Shabbos Kidei She'yasa. So we see that in the case of Safek, we're going to go L'chumra, and this Mishnah will support Rav. So we have one Mishnah, Safek L'chumra, the Mishnah Machshirin, that supports Rav. We have another Mishnah here in Masechta Shabbos, Safek, in the case of Osir Lo'oron, L'kula, and that supports Shmuel. Rav Yehuda Omer, Bambati K'tana, they had certain bathhouses that were very, very small, and they gathered water together and they heated it up. Im yesh bo rishus, if this particular small bathhouse belongs to the government, it's not a privately owned operation, then rochets ba miyat, then immediately after Shabbos, the Jew is allowed to go into that Beis HaMerchatz. So why is that so? So first of all, the Gemara clarifies my rishus. What did Rabbi Yehuda mean when he said rishus? Om Rabbi Yehuda, Om Rabbi Yitzchak, Bereid Rabbi Yehuda. Im yesh ba adam chashuv. It means that one of the officers in the governmental, in the government, actually uses this small ambati. So when they prepare this ambati and they heat up the water in this small bathhouse, they have in mind this adam chashuv, one of the savim, you know, one of the Secretary of State. Sheyesh lo asar avadim. He's so chashuv that he has 10 servants, you know, he has a whole security force around him. Shemachamim bo asor kumkumim b'vasachas bambati k'tano. And they heat up a large volume of water relative to the small bathhouse. And then mutaba lirchots ba miyat. The Jew is allowed to wash there, bathe there immediately after Shabbos, assuming he has permission from the government, because we know that this water was heated up on behalf of this tsar, this very important member of the government. Asu lo aron v'chafru lo kever. The Mishnah says that if the guy had prepared on Shabbos this coffin, or he dug a grave, and it was done all for the sake of a non-Jew, then another Jew is allowed to benefit. Amai. The Gemara asks, what's going on over here? How are you allowed to bury immediately after Shabbos with a kever that was dug by a guy? Hachinami b'chdei she'yaseh. Shouldn't we be waiting after Shabbos at least a period of a half hour, whatever time it takes to dig the grave? The answer must be that we're not choshesh, we're not afraid that maybe the grave was dug on behalf of a Jew. How do you know that? Omar ula bi omeid b'isratya. This grave was dug on the road, a public highway, or right off the highway. And a Jewish kever is not usually on a highway. We have our own separate cemetery. Therefore, we have no chashash that maybe this guy dug this grave on behalf of a Jew. Tenach kever, okay, I understand you have a proof in the case of a grave because you found it on the highway. That's not a Jewish cemetery. But Aron Ma'ikal Meimar, when the guy prepares a coffin, a bier, what they call that, maybe he did it on behalf of a Jew, Omer Abiyavo, Bemutal Al Kvaro. This coffin was laid down on a non-Jewish burial site. And there's no question, therefore, that it was designated for a non-Jew. And now we start the Mishnah here in the middle of Daf, towards the bottom of Daf, Kuf Nun Aleph Amen Aleph. The Mishnah wants to discuss Tzarchei HaMes that were done by a guy. Cults, Osim Cult Tzarchei HaMes. We ourselves are allowed to do anything on Shabbos to prepare for the burial of a dead. For example, Sochin, we're allowed to anoint the body, the corpse, with oil. Madichin also, we're allowed to wash off the body with water. Ubilvad, as long as lo yozis bo eiver, we don't cause any of the members of the body to move, because the body itself, and we've discussed this on many occasions, is muktzah. So that if you're pouring something on top of the body of the dead for the sake of covered up mess, that you're allowed to do on Shabbos, but if you're moving any of the limbs of the dead body, that you're not allowed to do. And now the Mishnah addresses the following question. So what if the mess is on a bed, for example, and on Shabbos you want to move it down from the bed, and there's no way that you're allowed to pick up the dead body because it's muktzah. So then, shomtim es hakar mitachtov, what you're allowed to do is you're allowed to remove the mattress underneath the corpse, umatilin oso, and then what's going to happen is that you're going to tip over the corpse al hachol on the ground, bishvil sheyamtin. And here we're turning to Daf Kuf Nun Aleph Amud Beis, and the Mishnah allows you to do this so that it will not be, the corpse will not be in the heat of the sun. And it seems that the science here is that if you leave the corpse on the mattresses and there are sheets and so forth, that will cause a certain heat, and you want to terminate that heat situation because that's going to cause decomposition and that's going to undermine the covet of the mess. Furthermore, what else are you allowed to do? Koshrin es halechi, right? You're allowed to tie onto the cheek of the corpse a kind of a kesher, again, because you're not causing any movement of the body. And the reason for this, as we'll soon see, is because we want to make sure that all the orifices of the corpse are closed, because when the air goes into the orifices, that also speeds up the process of decomposition. Lo sheyale ela shelo Yosef. He's not allowed to actually close the mouth of the dead, because that would again be, that would entail moving one of the limbs of a dead, which is muktzah. Ela shelo Yosef. In other words, what you can do is, if the mouth is open, you can tie it in such a way that it won't open anymore. You'll limit the amount of opening that it is without actually moving any part of the body of the corpse. V'chein, and furthermore, kore. And this is, has nothing to do with a mess per se, but if you have a beam of a roof of a house, shenishbara, and it broke, the beam is broke, and now the beam is kind of tipping down, falling into the house, and that's going to be a very dangerous situation. Then somchin osa besafsol, you're allowed to bring over a bench in order to support this beam so it shouldn't further fall, o baruchos hamita, or the legs of a bed, which you can bring forward and stop this beam from falling. But lo shetale El Shalot Tosif. In other words, you're not allowed to lift up the korah, cause it to go closer up to the roof, because then you're moving a korah, and any movement of a korah towards the roof is a violation of what's called Meleches Boneh. But if you want to terminate its falling, that you're allowed to do by bringing over a couch, etc., etc. The Gemara says, how could the Mishnah allow us to take oil and smear it on the body of the dead on Shabbos? V'amar Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel, Ma'isa v'talmido shel Rabbi Meir shenichnas achrav lebeis hamerchatz. There was a certain student of Rabbi Meir that followed Rabbi Meir into the bathhouse on Shabbos, and Bikesh, and this student wanted to make a more comfortable situation for Rabbi Meir. So Bikesh lahadiach karka, he wanted to wash the floor of the Beis HaMerchatz, and that would be a covered for Rabbi Meir. Amalo, Rabbi Meir says, Ein Madichin. We're not allowed to pour water on the ground on Shabbos. Losuch. Then the Talmud decided, all right, if I can't pour water on the ground, at least I'll try to smear some oil on the ground of this bathhouse in honor of Rebbe. Amalo, Rebbe said, Ein Sochin. You're not allowed to pour oil on karka, on Shabbos. And the Gemara understands now that the reason for Rabbi Meir in this Isra Adocha, this Isra Losuch as a karka, is because the karka is considered muktzah. And you're not allowed to pour something, whether it be water or oil, on top of muktzah. And if that be the case, we have a contradiction to our Mishnah, which allows you to pour the oil onto the body of the dead, and the dead is called muktzah. So the Gemara answers, you know what? You're allowed to pour oil onto muktzah. Rabbi Meir's problem with Ein Sochin Karka had nothing to do with muktzah. It had to do with the problem of what's called Lashvuye Gumos. We're always afraid that the karka might have crevices in it. Again, this wouldn't apply to our Shayish karka, but in those days, and by smearing or flattening the ground, you are violating a malacha of boneh, maleches boneh. And now we can understand why in our Mishnah there's no application here of Rabbi Meir's prohibition, because karka b'karka michlefa. You know, if we allow you to pat down, you know, and anoint the karka, you might come to do it in another karka where there are crevices and cracks, and then you'll violate maleches boneh. But meis b'karka lo michlef. We don't have any fear that he might make the confusion and think that if he's allowed to anoint the belly of a corpse, he's going to come from that to extrapolate and equate it with pouring oil over a piece of karka, over a piece of ground. Now, in our Mishnah, the Mishnah says, Osiv lo kol tzarkei emes. You may remember that our methodological point was that whenever it says kol, or klal, those kind of words, it's always coming to include something. Kol lasuye mai. What is this word kol coming to include? Lasuye ha detan rabbanon. To include that which we learned in a brisa. Now, this brisa is based on the following scientific principle, and that is that when you have a dead body, the best thing you want to do for a dead body to slow down the process of decomposition is to cool off the body. That's why we have morgues with refrigeration in it, okay? So that if you have either a metal substance or even glass, if you apply it to the body, it cools off the body. Again, how much temperature would go down, I don't know. But anyway, mevi'im kli mekar, we're allowed to bring any kind of a utensil that if we place it on the body of the corpse, it will cool off the body. For example, glassware, or clay matachos, or metal, menichem al kreso, and we put it down on the belly of the corpse, kidei shelo tafuach. Right, the biggest fear of decomposition is when the body starts blowing up. And it blows up and then it cracks. It's horrible. And that blowing up happens because of two factors. Number one, the air going into the holes, the orifices of the corpse. And number two, because of the hot, because of the heat. Furthermore, pokekim es nekovov, any orifices in the body should be pokekim. Means that we plug them up. For example, his mouth or his nostrils or his anal opening, all these openings should be clogged up, should be plugged up. Kidei shaloti kones b'maruach, because when the air goes into these orifices, it causes the body to blow up. And now the Gemara is going to quote Shlomo b'chach maso. And this means Shlomo from the book of Koheles. This is the 12th chapter of the book of Koheles. Koheles sometimes, more often than not, is a depressing book. And what we're going to see today, and you'll have to finish this on your own for tomorrow, is that Shlomo HaMelech in Koheles goes through all the terrible, disgusting, repulsive things that happen to a corpse after its death. And we'll start reading a little bit from the 12th chapter of Koheles. He says the following: Ad asher lo yerotek chevel hakesef, before the silver rope snaps. So what is this rope that, so to speak, snaps after death? Every single phrase in this unit of verses refers to a different part of the body, and Shlomo describes the decomposition after death of that part of the body. It's very gory. So if you don't have a good solid stomach, you don't want to learn this Gemara. Anyway, so what is this Hevel that he's speaking about? And he says that the Hevel will snap. And the Gemara answers, Zechut HaShidra. This is referring to the spinal cord. And the spinal cord, which is made up of different little vertebrae, after death, it gets very dried up. Any moisture left in the bones is completely gone with the process of decomposition. And it starts snapping. The vertebrae kind of folds over. And that's number one. Then, in the same verse, Shlomo HaMelech says, Vitarutz gulas hazav. And the golden bowl is shattered. Okay, as we said, everything in this pasuk refers to a different part, a different organ, or limb in the human body. And here the word gulas is used. Now, gulas is a Hebrew word, and I'll give you a synonym for gulas, and that's ma'ayan. Ma'ayan is something from which liquids flow. And the Gemara says that that's an allusion to the private parts of a male body from which liquids flow. And it becomes shattered. After death, it just breaks apart. That part of the membrane of the membrum. Okay, fine. Then the pasuk says, "V'tishaver kad al hamabua," and the pitcher is broken at the fountain. And now we're looking for the allusion of the word mabua, and that's referring to the keres, to the belly. And mabua is a Hebrew word which usually translates as fountain, but in this case we're looking at the letters that make up the word mabua, and we see it as of, meaning some sort of thick part of the body. And when a person dies, his belly starts breaking apart. Not a pleasant sight. Then it says, in the same pasuk, v'narotz hagalgal el habor, and the wheel is smashed at the pit. And we're wondering what this wheel and pit is all about. Ze perish. Perish in Hebrew is called, it's something discussing ayotim and o'odim, nikra galgal miloshen golol. Golol, Gimel, Lamed, Lamed, if you're familiar with Masechta Bava Kamma and Apostle Gimishpatim, is a reference to excrement. And it says here, Verotz, Norotz. And somehow the excrement actually goes into the mouth of the dead body. Vechenu Omer. And now we're going to go to the castigation of Malachi at the end of Tanakh. And the Apostle says, Vizeresi. Vizerisi, which means to spread around, parash, excrement, al pnechem. It's almost as if God is saying that he finds disgusting your the way you celebrate holidays and so forth and so on, and he's going to spread excrement over your face. It's a very harsh kind of a rebuke from Malachi. And now the Gemara is going to dash in the next part of that same pasuk in Malachi, which says, Perish Chagechem, the excrement of your festivals. Omer Avhunav Yamri Le, Omer Av Chaga, Elu Bnei Odom Shemenichim Devrei Torah V'Osim Kol Yimeim Kechagim. So the word Chag here doesn't refer to the Jewish festivals per se, although that's the literal translation, but refers to the way you enjoy celebrations. And it's the Navi Malachi is castigating those who make life into one long celebration. Eat, drink, and be merry on a daily basis. They're always involved all of their lives in Ta'anugim, Kol Yomem Kechageyem, instead of being more serious and dedicating themselves to Torah. Omer Av Levi, Omer Av Poppy, Omer Av Yoshua, Le'achar Shloshi Yomim, getting back to the decomposition of the corpse, is after 3 days, kreso nivkas. It means that the belly starts completely cracking up, breaking up into smaller pieces. And this also refers to the large intestines, which is holding on to excrement, and the excrement, nofelis lo panav, actually falls on the face of the dead, viomerislo, and it's as if, symbolically, his belly is talking to him, and saying to him, tol mashanasata bi, that you were very enjoyable, you ate and you drank, I'm going to give it back to you, in a slightly different form. Now the Mishnah continues with the topic of tzorchei ames. What are the needs of the dead? Number one, ein ma'amtim es hames b'shabbos v'lo b'chol. We're not allowed to close the eyes of the corpse on Shabbos. That would be moving his eyelids, which is moving muktzah. But even during the week, if a person dies, don't think that the first thing you should do is to cover his eyes, the eyes of the dead. I mean, maybe that's true for other religions. We don't immediately do that. Why? Because lo b'cholim yitzias nefesh, you think that the person has already expired. V'ama'atzeim im yitzias nefesh areza shofech dam. It's very possible that the person is still alive. He fainted, but he's still alive. And by closing his eyes, you speed up his death. And speeding up the death of a person is called the karev misoso, and that's tantamount to shvichas damim. And a lot of the shilas that are coming up now with ventilators and this, that, and the other thing have to do with this Mishnah of ma'atzeim es enei hames. Tanu rabbanan, hama'atzmo, if somebody went ahead and he closed the eyes of a person thinking that person is dead, in yitzias hanefesh, at the moment that the person is dying, hareza shofech dam. Why? Because, mashal, I'll give you a metaphor from ner shekub of olechus. You have a candle which is very quickly getting extinguished. It's on its way out. But if Adam meniach etzbo alef, he puts his finger on top of it, miyad kovsa, he immediately extinguishes the candle. Here too, if you do anything to the body before he actually expires, then you might, for example, by closing his eyes, you might be actually speeding up his death. And that's why we call him Shofech Domin. Tanya, we learned in a Braisa. Rav Shim Gamliel Omer HaRotza Shiyas Atzmu Einov Shalmes. Let's say we wait a period of time. We know for sure now that the person has died. But on the other hand, it's Shabbos. So we have now a problem of moving his eyelids. So how do we move his, or cause the dead to close his eyes? So again, Rabbi Osai, this is an amazing braisa. I would love to know if you can substantiate this by researching this in science. But it seems that there's something that you could do without having to close the eyes directly that could cause the corpse to close the eyes. That's fascinating. This reminds me of a study, you know, it's a different kind of medicine, it's called reflexology. Yeah. And he says the following, Nofech lo yayin b'chotmo, he can put some wine into the nose, Nosein shemen b'rise enov, and he applies oil between the eyelids, V'ochez b'shnei gudle raglov, and he grabs onto the large toes, V'hein misatzmin me'alehem, and the eyes will close on their own. So here's a way, by blowing wine into the nose, applying oil between the eyelashes, and grabbing hold and squeezing the two large toes of the corpse, the eyes close on their own. And that's not a violation of tiltal muktzah. Tanya, we learned in a braisa, Rav Shimon Gamliel Omer, Tinok ben Yomo, if an infant was just born now, chai, and it's still alive, mechalin all of us haShabbos, will do whatever we have to do to violate the Shabbos to save the baby. But paradoxically, even someone as great as David Melech Yisrael Ness, and he died, the great king of Israel, ain mechalin of us haShabbos, we do nothing to violate the Shabbos. Again, we'll try to find ways of delaying the decomposition, but without violating mukta directly or anything like that. Tinok ben yomo chai mechalin of Shabbos omer Torah chalel of Shabbos echad kidei sheyishmar Shabbos is harbe. The Gemara explains the reasoning that underlies Rav Shimon Gamliel's formulation is that it pays pragmatically to violate one Shabbos for the sake of many Shabbosos, but David Melch Yisrael mes ein mechalim kevin shemes, although once a person is dead, batel mina mitzvahs, there's no possibility that he will fulfill a future Shabbos. He's potter. Behind the Yom Rabbi Yochanan darshan the pasuk in Tehillim by mesim chafshi, the dead are free. What does that mean? They're free. Kevon shemes Adam. Once a person dies, nasa chafshi mina mitzvos. He's free of any obligations of mitzvahs, and therefore we don't put tzitzis on a dead body. On the contrary, you know, we probably would remove the tzitzis from his body, and that's because he's chafshi. So again, if there's any poem that you have ever heard that says Lios am chafshi, please don't identify that with chafshi, because Lios am chafshi in Rabbi Yochanan's frame of reference would mean Lios am mess. Only a mess is chafshi. Rav Kook had a different anthem. In any event, Visanya we learned in a Reis or Rav Shimon Elazar Omer, Tinok ben Chai, Ein Tzorech L'Shomro Minachuldo Minachborim. There's a natural protection from any sort of weasels and mice with regard to a live, even a tiny, tiny infant. Aval Og Melech Aboshen, even the giant of giants, Mace, as soon as he's dead, Tzorech L'Shomro Minachuldo Minachborim. It means that even the weasels are aware of a human's death, and they take advantage of that, and they want to enjoy the meat of a dead body, of a human body. Shenemar, we see this with regard to God's blessing to Noach and his children. Umorachem v'chitchem yia, and then the pasuk says, Al kol chayas ha'aretz, and it says, chitchem. And chitchem is chiyutchem. So we read it, the fear from your life is cast upon all the wild animals, which means, kol zman shadam chai, as long as you're alive, then a masa mutel sal brios kevin shemes botlei masa. And the animals have no fear of a dead body. Omra papenakatinon, we have a certain tradition that arye abe tre lo nafil, that generally speaking, a lion will not pounce upon two human beings. And that's based on this pasuk that we just saw in the brach of Hashem to Noach, Umorachem v'chitchem yeh al kol chayas haaretz. Morachem means your fear in the plural, means when there's two people, then the lion, the king of all animals, is afraid of two human beings. So the Gemara says that's not so. Hakoch hazinim denofil. We have recorded cases in which a lion attacked more than one human being. Hahu Kidarami bar Abba. Those cases where a lion attacks more than one human being, those human beings have already been decreed up in heaven to die. The Omar Rami bar Choma in Chai Sholetis Ba'adam Hashin Nidmelo Kibehema. An animal will attack a wild beast, like for example, a lion will attack a human being because he thinks the human being is a behema. What is a behema? So if you translate this Gemara literally, a behema means another animal. And it means that the lion mistakenly thought the human being was an animal. But that's not the pshat. Because the Gemara quotes a pasuk in Tehillim, Shenemar Adam biyakar bal yolin nimshal kibehemos nidm. Which means that if a wild beast attacks a human being, then it means that we have to know that nidme, it seemed to him that it was a behema. And why is it a behema? Sheniknisa olav misa. Rashi says it means that it was already declared up in heaven that this human being would die. And that's where the lion could be perhaps an agent in the hands of God to bring about the death of a human being. And this human being is like a behema, just like a behema has no guarantee to live until God takes its life, because animals do die in nature. So to this man, it's been declared up in heaven that he will die. Amar Rav Chanina, now that we're on the subject of differentiating between one human being alone and two together, says Rav Chanina, Aso lishan bebayis yechidi, a person should not sleep alone at night, and that's because of a certain kind of a demon that loves to attack at night when there's one alone. And you may recall the Gemara at the beginning of Masechet Brachos spoke about the fact that if you want to avoid the demons, then you need more than one human being. Lilis is the name of this demon that loves to attack at night, and especially in a case of a person who's alone in a house at night. Tanya, we learned in a Braisa, Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar Omer, Asei ad shatamotzi, means Asei tzedakah, give charity as soon as you have the opportunity to do so. Ad shatamotzi, when you find the poor people, Umatzui lecha, and you have money in your pocket to give him, v'odcha b'yadecha, you're still alive, and you haven't died yet. Take every advantage of every opportunity to give tzedakah, to give charity while you're alive. Don't wait too long, it might be too late. V'af Shlomo amar b'chachmaso, and Shlomo also in that very same chapter in Koheles, this 12th chapter that we will get really into detail. I don't know if I'll do it, maybe you'll have to do it on your own, depending on the time, but anyway, there, when he's describing the terrible things that happen to a corpse after death, he gives you his musar shmuz, and he says, "Uzacharas baracha b'mei bechurosecha, remember your Creator during your youth, ad asher lo yavo yimei hara'ah, until the bad days come." And what are the bad days? Elu yimei azikna. These are older age, when a person is so weak that he cannot fulfill the mitzvahs that he could do during his youth. So take advantage of youth with its power and fulfill all the mitzvahs. Don't waste one opportune moment. V'igiu shadim asher tomar ein li bohem chefetz. And Shlomo HaMelech, in his wisdom, he describes metaphorically the days of Mashiach as days which Ein b'hem chefetz, means there's no desire. What does that mean? There's no will. Eli mei Mashiach shein b'hem lo zchus v'lo chova. In other words, you are no longer going to be judged during those days, because those are the days of Mashiach. Everybody will be wealthy, so to speak. There'll be no poverty. So take advantage of opportunities for tzedakah, for charity, before the days of Mashiach come about, because then you will not have to give charity to poor people. Upliga de Shmuel, however, this position about Yemos HaMashiach is the opinion of Rav Shimon ben Elazar, but Shmuel has a different opinion. And again, this is a couple of hours' work here on this machlokas, this gigantic controversy about what Yemei HaMashiach are going to be like. The Amar Shmuel, Ein Bein Olam Azeli, Yemos HaMashiach al Shibud Malchus Bilvad. There will be no difference between Yemos HaMashiach. We'll still have poverty even during Mashiach's time. The only difference is that the Jewish nation will not be subjugated to the kings of the other nations. It'll be a termination of anti-Semitism. Shenemar, the Pasuk says, in Sefer Dvarim, Ki lo yechdal evyon mikerev haaretz. There will never be a termination of poverty in the land. There will always be poor people, says Shmuel, even during the days of Mashiach. Tanya, we learned in a braisa, Rabbi Lozer HaKapar Omer, Li'olam Yevakish Odom Rachmim Al Mida Zu. A person should always be concerned about the possibility of poverty, and therefore he should always be supplicating God that he should not be poor, because it's built into the universe, She'im hu lo ba ba b'no, that if he won't be poor, then perhaps Nebuchadnezzar's children will be poor. V'im b'no lo ba ben b'no ba, or his grandchildren might be poor. This is the way poverty works. It's like a circle, and it always comes around. So you want to pray to God to save you and your offspring and your descendants from poverty. Shenemar, in the parsha of Halva, in Sefer Dvarim, it says, Nason titein lo v'lo yera levavcha besitcha lo ki biglal hadover hazeh yivarecha Hashem alokecha. Tanit Bei, Rabbi Yishmael, this brisa is telling you about poverty that's a galgal shu chozer ba'olam. It means that it's like a wheel that goes around and around in the world. And at some point, poverty will basically hit everybody. He says here that poverty is cyclical, and it could never be removed permanently. If one is not poor now, he may never one day become poor. If he doesn't become poor, his descendants may become poor. Sooner or later, poverty befalls every family. And we have to pray for the protection of ourselves and our descendants. Omer of Yosef Nakhtinon, we have a tradition from our forefathers, Haitzumi Rabbona, Talmud Chacham, who's young and he's sharp, Lo Mi Ani, he doesn't become poor. So the Gemara says, what are you talking about? Volka Chazina Demi Ani. We see with our eyes, Talmidei Chachamim, young people who become poor. So the Gemara answers him, Isa Demi Ani, if you've ever seen a Talmud Chacham that became poor, then Adure Apischa Lo Mahader. Then he doesn't reach the level of destitution that he knocks on doors. That level, what we call mechazer al apsochim, called in Hebrew, that is something that's so humiliating that will not happen to a Talmud Chacham. The Maharsha adds another point. He says, Talmidei Chachamim einam mezalzelin v'atzman. They will not lower themselves, lachzol apsochim, but rather mistapek b'muot, they'd rather be satisfied with the smallest amount possible in order to survive. It could also be that there's rachmanus, people have compassion on talmidei chachamim, and they will not allow a talmid chachamim to get to that point in which he will have to knock on doors. Amalei Rab Chiya l'dbeise, Rab Chiya instructed his wife, Ki asi anya, if a poor person comes in front of you, ak dime le rifta, quickly bring him a loaf of bread, ki hefi de lakadmu lebanayich. So in case your children will ever become poor, they will give bread to your children. And this is called Mida Keneged Mida. And Hashem will reward you for what you did in a similar way. Amro Le, so his wife says, Melech Kolayis Lu, are you giving me a curse that my children will become poor? Amro Lehu Rav Chiya responded, Krokok Siv. We have this pasuk that we darshened earlier in Debei Rav Yishmael, that is, Ki Beglala Dobra Zeta Debei Rav Yishmael, Galgal Hu Shechozer Ba'olam. Everyone, eventually, every family will be struck by this curse of poverty. Tanya, we learned in a brisa from Gamliel, Berevi Omer. There's a posuk in the mitzvah of Ira Nidachas that says, V'nasan l'cha rachamim v'richamcha v'hirbecha. And I will bestow upon you compassion, and God's creatures will have compassion, which means that kol amarachim al abrios marachim olav min hashamayim. If we have compassion on God's creatures, then God will have compassion on us. But if eino marachim al abrios, we have no compassion, then God will not have compassion on us. Again, an example of mida keneged mida. We'll finish up with the next few lines. And the Gemara goes back to Shlomo Amel's description in Koheles, and it says, Ad asher lo techshach ha-shemesh ve-ha-or, before the sun and the light grow dark, zu padachas va-chotem, this is a reference to the forehead and the nose. And once again, this is going to go through different kinds and phases of post-mortem situations. Okay, let's just see where we're up to. We're almost finished with the Amud, and we got up to this pasuk ad asher lo techshach hashemesh v'ha'or.